Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for January 5th, 2009, and on this episode, Chicago Shakespeare Theater's executive director Chris Henderson is interviewed by Ann Nicholson Weber. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, and let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Ann Nicholson Weber, and you're listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. This week, my guest is Chris Henderson, who's the executive director at Chicago Shakespeare Theater. And we're going to be talking about the World Stage Series, which he curates with Barbara Gaines, bringing amazing international theater here to Chicago. So, Chris, maybe you could start by just describing what the World Stage Series is, maybe where it began and how you define what you're trying to do.
Well, the World Stage Series began when we moved to our new home here on Navy Pier back in 2000. The idea of international performance here in Chicago is certainly not a new one, and in my time here in Chicago is probably best represented by the work of Jane Solins and her International Theater Festival in the 80s and 90s, and Susan Lipman's incredible work with Performing Arts Chicago, which I just swear was before its time. Uh-huh. I think that there was such a forward view of what Chicago should be and could accept that Susan and that organization had. So when we came out to the pier, you know, we had always brought international directors in to direct our works at the Ruth Page Theater. So it was not new to us to think about looking outside the borders of Chicago for our artists. But we really wanted to find work in addition to the core work of Chicago Shakespeare, which obviously is to explore the canon of Shakespeare, work that we could set alongside Chicago Shakespeare's productions of William Shakespeare's plays, and keep our standard of excellence high, something, work that would keep us raising the bar of our own work. And this international series is a way for us to do that. It not only serves us in terms of being that, you know, that standard that one can only get to if you are working alongside these great artists and these great theaters of the world, but it is also work that Chicago audiences should see. There is just an embarrassment of riches of homegrown talent here in Chicago. But I think too often in our insular sort of American way, we don't have the opportunity to get out and see these other great works as audiences. And the International Theater Festival and Performing Arts Chicago did that for us. And so Barbara and I were very thrilled to have the opportunity when we opened this new theater to make this a part of our programming.
Mm-hmm. I you talk about the International Theater Festival and Performing Arts Chicago. I know for me, for instance, being introduced to Robert Lepage's work through those opportunities was just hugely important. And similarly, to bring people as you have, like Peter Brook, you know, international superstars of the theater, but whose approach to theater really is very different. I mean, I think you're right to say there's a certain possibility of parochialism here. We have our Chicago theater and our style, but there's so much else, and particularly European sensibility is kind of underrepresented, I would say, in Chicago theater. So I notice that a lot of what you bring has that quality.
These are artists who have come about in the most extraordinary countries, with the most extraordinary, when you think about Peter Brook's, you know, move from, you know, the young Peter Brook who did The Midsummer in the 60s and led the beginning of the RSC with that incredible team, and then left Great Britain in a fury and went to Paris and opened his own Bouffe du Nord. These are people of the theater who have lived lives that, in our American culture, where art is not a priority, it is nearly impossible to have that artistic opportunity to explore and to risk take.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right, and
mm-hmm.
and to work. There is a wonderful, you know, intimacy, I would say, of the geography of Europe and a touring circuit still that allows work to move around. That here in America, both I think because of the limited financial resource that the performing arts are able to access, and just the vastness of this country of ours, we find ourselves being more regional, being more local in our view of the arts. I have to say, you bring up Peter Brook, it was for me, you know, as I look back on what has been a tremendous opportunity these last two decades here at Chicago Shakespeare to take this little company to a larger scale and to work with the artists we get to work with. For Peter Brook, when Peter Brook stepped into Chicago Shakespeare the very first time, for me, it wasn't the opening night of the theater or the groundbreaking of this theater. Nothing has come close for me to watching him cross the threshold mm-hmm. of Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, you know, Empty Space was for so many right. years as a young theater artist my most important
Bible,
and
right.
it truly was.
Sure.
And to have him step foot in this theater, and then we've had three Peter Brook projects. One of the most thrilling Peter Brook experiences, when he was here with his production of Hamlet, he was preparing the tour of Le Costume, which Barbara and I had seen in Paris, and he wanted to meet some young actors here in Chicago. And so we brought him a few performers, a number of whom were at the theater school at the time. And that is where he first met Karen Aldridge, and then he cast Karen in Le Costume. And Karen got to join the International Company of Le Costume and play London and then come back here to Chicago. And so the connectivity, the small world, not only was Peter Brook this great icon of the world theater here, but he was engaging with our artists and that relationship exactly
that.
between Karen and Peter is one of the, I think, one of the great success stories of our World Stage series.
Yeah. Well, I've had the experience of going to London and seeing theater there and having the feeling of being kind of at the source of English-speaking theater. It just feels like somehow more, I can't say authentic, that's not right, but just more directly connected to the antecedents of the theater that we do. It's like we're a little removed. And looking at some of the other productions you've done, I feel like you're bringing... For instance, bringing an Italian company doing Commedia. It feels to me like when you do that, that you're bringing to our audiences that same kind of immediacy of connection to a tradition that we don't have being Americans and being kind of, as you say, and as I also agree, a little bit parochial. Is that a conscious choice, or do you just go out and look for the best stuff?
You know, I wish I could say there was a formula to all of this, mm-hmm. but we are looking, as we do when we're looking at work here in this country, here in this city, here in our own theaters, you know, we are looking for great stories told excellently well on stage. Now, there's no denying that when you get to see the Piccolo Theater from Milan do a Commedia in their Arlecchino, there is a tradition. Ferruccio Saleri, there is not an actor in the world who can play Commedia the way this, I think he was 78 years old when he played it. It was the most amazing thing to watch him, if you saw that production, to watch him do the 2.5 hours traffic of that stage, doing this energetic, amazing performance, and then to come out for the curtain call and remove his mask and see this shock of white hair and realize
this
that
is an
this
old man
was of an age. Unbelievable. Just is a training and a commitment to the form, you know, and the institutional opportunity for artists to hone that craft, to take their God-given talent and then make it so much more, that so many of these international companies, the Comédie Française, for example.
Seeing them do Molière would be
exactly
a similar
right.
thing, right?
That's exactly right. But mm-hmm. that isn't the basis. I mean, certainly of world stage. I mean, we certainly will look for those culturally specific, you know, the productions that can only come from, you know, from that geographic location or from that particular institution. But first and foremost, we're looking for great storytelling done in a highly theatrical way that has some level of, you know, important accessibility. And I don't mean that we don't think of accessible as a bad word around here, because I think it goes hand in hand with the great storytelling and the great acting. Absolutely any dramatic material, when put in the hands of great actors and then theatricalized in a wonderful imaginative way, I think becomes accessible. And so that's really what we're looking for. But also to make sure that we look at, we've done about nearly 30 world stage productions by the end of this season. And I think as you look over them, they are big and small. They are of, you know, from companies of just centuries-long repute to very new startup ventures. And we're really just looking for quality. We're really just looking to take what we know we have in our work here in Chicago and the great actors of Chicago and those who join us here for the Chicago Shakespeare Productions. You know, we're looking to put work alongside that homegrown work that reminds us, you know,
how great it can be,
what excellence in the theater is. Right. And excellence doesn't always mean it's winning, does it? It means you appreciate the risk of it. You appreciate the daring of it. I think if anything, and we're going to see this with our production of The Investigation that we're bringing from Rwanda in a few weeks, it is a daring production. It is simply told. It is shockingly relevant, even though the material is 40 years old. It is a challenging piece, both in its presentation and in its content. The daring of these artists who lived lives, you know, in the mid-90s that none of us can imagine, to choose theater as their art form to express who they are, and to then travel the world and share who they are through these words and in this production is astonishing.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you had, I can imagine that you, first of all, you go out into the world to see stuff. You travel, and I don't even know how you begin. What do you decide? How do you decide what to see?
Well, that's a great question. It was difficult at the start. I mean, one of the great things is that the world is small, and the world of the theater is even smaller. And we have developed a wonderful community of friends whose taste we appreciate and who understand what we are trying to do. And so while it was a challenge and there was a lot of hit and miss in the early years, now it's just easier because we are so well connected around the world that we have friends and we make calls and we get calls and
someone sends you an email, you've got to come and
exactly
see.
That's exactly right. Uh-huh. And then we're able to go and
it sounds
and
like a great job.
It is an unbelievable job. It is an unbelievable job.
Right.
And there's so much great theater. So mm-hmm. So some of it is just where the winds happen to blow us, which is part of the thrill of it all.
And then there must be logistical considerations as well.
Well, always. I mean, getting a company over to America from abroad is not easy on any level. And in most cases, especially with the larger, like Fragments, that Peterbrook project, we were the only American engagement.
Which meant there was no sharing of travel costs.
None at all. Uh-huh. And it meant the complications of the work, you know, in terms of the visas and just making it all happen. Sometimes when it's a tour that is looking to North America, we are able to share the complications of it all. Because the administration of it is complicated. I never think it's terribly interesting, but you know, we just found out in investigation there's one actor substitution and we are beyond the visa application process. And so this question of how exactly we get this actor the visa within this 30-day period from the embassy in Kigali, it's not...
This is the part that is not so fun.
That's right. It's not simple. And yet every World Stage production sort of has a whole play leading up to it. I mean, it is very dramatic, the way they sort of come together and what happens. But I think the connection, you know, the contacts around the world now, but making sure that time is the hard part with artists, which if I can, you know, we had debated in the early days of this series whether we should just look at a festival format and look at 2 or 3 weeks and bring all of the work and concentrate it. And while that had tremendous upside in terms of the discourse that would come with that, the opportunity to see the work in a concentrated fashion.
And bring people from out of Chicago.
Exactly, and really make it a destination. But when we looked very honestly, and we did a lot of investigation of this, we knew we would have to compromise what the work was, because it would have to be work that could find its way to America during that period.
Particular time, right.
And I think that any festival suffers that. And we decided that in the end, we would rather, at least for this first decade, bring the work that we wanted to bring and schedule it when it could be here, so that when Catherine Hunter could be here in the fragments, when Mark Rylance could be here with the Globe, that it was so important for us to be presenting the artists. We recently saw Rupert Gould's production of Six Characters in Search of an Author, which just closed on the West End with Ian McDermott, who's a friend of ours. A magnificent production. I hope we'll see it here in Chicago in the next 36 months, but as of right now, there are no plans for this production to come to America. The point at which there is, I'm pretty sure we'll see it. And so now there's probably a list of 20 other productions around the world that we are tracking and in conversations with, but just need, you know, as we all know in showbiz, you know, sort of need the stars to align to make anything happen, right? And then when that alignment takes place, we're ready to jump on it and bring that idea down to earth and make it so.
Have you ever had the experience of seeing something in context and seeing it one way, and then it comes here, and now you're looking at it kind of the way a host does when you take someone out to a restaurant, and suddenly you're seeing it as if you're responsible for it? Does it change? Have things not played the way you expected them to when they got here?
It's such a great question, because it is different when you see the work in its home environment, or sometimes we see the work when it's already out and about in the world. The Comédie Française comes to mind immediately, because The Imaginary Invalid, when we saw it in Paris at the Comédie Française, there was obviously no projected translation. And while we sort of boned up on our Molière before we went in, there just can't possibly be the same experience when you're working with a foreign language piece. What you do know is whether it's well acted, whether the story is well told. It's almost the greatest test for the sort of requirements that I talked about earlier.
Right.
You know that. But then when it came and the projected translation was added, it became hilarious to me here in Chicago.
Right.
Not a funny production when I saw it in Paris, because I just didn't have the facility to find the humor in the language.
Right.
The James Turret, which we saw in Sartrouville, an hour outside of Paris, having known very little about him, I don't know if you
that was
saw
the Parpluie.
Bright Abyss, the first production. It was such a new form. You know, we sat there watching it, just, you know, our jaws
agape.
Dropped.
Yeah.
And yet we wondered whether Chicago was going to make any sense of it. You know, here was, especially as a, you know, while the international work isn't necessarily connected to Shakespeare, this was a non-language, you know, a non-language piece. And I wondered what Chicago would think of it. But at every turn, every time we've brought a piece where we thought there might be some challenging of it or some concern about it, you know, that host at the restaurant, every time we have felt more respectful, if that's possible, of this audience that we have here in Chicago, because they are an audience that listens. Every company that has been here, and many of them play New York before they come to us or directly after us, and across the board, they say that the Chicago audience is the best audience. Actually, the Midsummer company that was just here from India, now this is a company that celebrated their 300th performance with us after being out on tour for 2 years. They all said that Chicago was the very best stop to date. And that's really saying something, because this is one of the most celebrated productions, you know, that has been doing the world.
Going everywhere.
The world tour
right.
in the last couple of years.
Well, it brings up something that's very interesting to me about theater, which is the extent to which it is a local or is not a local art form. And an example that I think of, I remember talking to Bob Falls about the production of Night of Iguana he did here with Jerry Jones and Bill Peterson, which for me was one of the greatest things I ever saw in my life. And then it went to New York and kind of felt completely flat. And you're asking yourself, isn't there any objective, isn't there any objective truth to its excellence, you know? And yet in New York, somehow whatever it was that I thought was so great didn't come across. So I would think that you would have that issue in spades, that there would be things that somehow glean from their the place that they've grown up some meaning that gets lost when they come here. And you've talked about the opposite, for instance, you know, that something gained meaning for you. But has that happened?
Yeah, it's a great question, because in a festival format, there's more leeway in that because the work is sitting alongside each other. And so the risk of the one-off where we bring four productions, but we stagger them every couple of months, means that the context in which we place it is a singular context.
Right.
But I think this is the case in any theatrical endeavor, that the now of it is everything.
Right. Right.
And so some of theatrical production is building the box in which to place the work for your particular now and your particular place. And so I think it's a contextual, and I don't necessarily mean that in a marketing sense, although it has to do with marketing. I think it also has to do with knowing one's audience. I think that we have an audience that listens, in part because of the Shakespeare, in part because of the incredible actors that speak the Shakespeare from our stage.
And because of the stage, by the way. I mean, having such a fantastic theater makes a difference.
That's exactly right. And I think all of that. And then as the World Stage Series grows in its place here in Chicago, because I think this is only the beginning of what this program can be and should be for the city. I mean, I think that we are entering a time where I hope in our country that the artists of our country and will be looked at as great ambassadors to get out into the world and to receive the world's other artists, to demonstrate a willingness to get along in a way that we have not been doing of late. But there is that universal truth in the theater. I think that we know it when we see it. We know the talent when we see it. Mm-hmm. It's a question maybe if we have enough appreciation, enough experience to bring to bear on the event. I think the Midsummer, you know, which was performed from India, which was performed half in English and half in seven different languages, was a big challenge with no projected translation.
Mm-hmm.
We debated whether to use projected translation because the city, it played Columbus, Ohio right before it came to us. It had done four American cities, and only in Columbus and New Haven, of all the cities it played around the world, only in New Haven and Columbus did it play with projected translation. Mm. And from our first conversations with Tim Supple, the director, he was insistent that that was not the way the piece was created.
Right.
That was not the idea of the piece, and that the translation was nothing more than a distraction from the work.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I understand the decision that was made in New Haven and Columbus.
Yeah.
And our audience was challenged by that. Mm-hmm. And honestly, there was, there were some departures during the interval. There's no question that there were people that it wasn't their idea of what A Midsummer Night's Dream should be.
Mm-hmm. But that's a very interesting example, because unlike, for instance, the Comédie Française, which was conceived to be played to French audiences and now is being, you know, translated for an English audience, that's a piece that was conceived to be in nobody's language because it was in so many languages. No, nobody in the audience would understand everything that was said because it was in so many different languages. So I can understand why you would choose not, why you would follow the intent of the director. And you have such a well-known piece that people can probably, in general, follow it without. But you do lose. I mean, I did feel the loss of the language for sure. I mean, that's Shakespeare we're not hearing.
It is Shakespeare we're not hearing. But then there's some sort of question about, you know, the ownership of Shakespeare in our English speaking world. Mm-hmm. I think as we, it's one of, you asked me earlier about sort of the idea of world stage. I mean, Shakespeare is one of the world's great dramatists. He does belong to the world. And while the language is, you know, the genius of the man, there is no question.
It's a really good story.
That's right. Yeah, again, I go back to saying that his stories and the characters that he draws are just second to none. And why shouldn't those be explored by this company that spent a year together developing the piece across India?
Right.
And how thrilling for us to get to see what came of that exploration.
Right.
Because it is that exploration of the canon. that we are committed to. It isn't the exploration of the canon in English that
right,
we are committed
right,
to.
Right.
But I can understand how it is challenging for an audience. And mm-hmm. and we sent out materials to everyone who had purchased tickets in advance with summaries of the show again and articles from the director. Again, it's part of this helping an audience help themselves to be open to work that
right.
that is other than what they might expect. Because
right.
World Stage has to be surprising. I think that if there is something that we, if we have one personal goal, Barbara and I, it is to make sure that season after season, you look at that lineup and you're just surprised by
mm-hmm.
it. And certainly there is a lot of work out there around the world to keep surprising us for a long time to come.
Well, I just want to ask one more question because I was so intrigued by it. You talked about your efforts to contextualize for the audiences, and you said that isn't only marketing. What does that involve? What are the things you can do that can help an audience come prepared to get what there is to get out of a production that may require a lot from them?
I think that the experience, the critical mass of the experience with the international work, I think that that is important, especially the foreign language work.
So you're educating an audience by seeing more productions.
I think that's right, that there has to be. And in a way, I think if there's one thing that the World Stage, I wish we could add four more productions a year.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that that learning, that experience
just happen
would grow
faster.
Exponentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity to meet the artists. I mean, now that's not necessarily for the audience, but one of the things we launched a few years ago, a program called Sharing the World Stage, where every time there is a company in, we create opportunities for Chicago performing artists to
wow.
get together with them. It was a really important commitment for us to make, to say to the theater artists and the performing artists in general of Chicago to come and have access to the company. So we did a master class with Tim Supple for some of Chicago's leading actors on how to create work as The Midsummer had been created when Trans Express, the French street theater company, was here. We had a number of the physical theater companies here to look at their setup on this crane that lifted them 200 feet over the heads of the audience out here on Navy Pier. We are having a number of workshops with the company of the investigation. Because I think as a mm-hmm. a kid who came up in the theater here in Chicago, that was one of the things the International Festival afforded me, just
yeah.
having it here, reminding me that there was a big wide world of theater out there.
Right.
And so we made $5 tickets available for theater artists for The Midsummer so that price wouldn't be an obstacle. It's a really important part of what World Stage has become to make sure that we all get to share it.
And then, of course, our audiences benefit from the cross-fertilization that happens in the work of our artists here as they are exposed to a broader spectrum of what the theater can
be. Again, it's where that bar is going to be set in terms
mm-hmm.
of what we all aspire to in our work. And I think while we certainly inspire each other here in this incredibly rich town of theater artists, I think that to invite outsiders in to help us reimagine ourselves.
Yeah.
It's what it's all about.
Yeah. I interviewed Richard Christensen and I said, what's the one thing we need more of in Chicago? And he said, more international theater. So it's great that you're making strides in meeting that need here. Well, thanks, Chris, so much. It's been lovely to talk to you.
My pleasure.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of January 5th, 2009. American Theater Company announces the inauguration of American Classic Repertory, featuring Sam Shepard's True West and Susan Laurie Park's Top Dog Underdog. American Classic Repertory begins with True West, which runs from January 15th through March 8th. On January 22nd, Susan Laurie Park's Top Dog Underdog joins the rep and will run through March 8th as well. Both plays are about the story of two brothers, So, in addition to the plays alternating nightly, the actors playing the brothers will switch between productions as well. In this groundbreaking decision, giving audiences the opportunity to see two versions of each play on the same set, and giving you twice the reason to return and see it all over again. Haha, well played, ATC. American Classic Repertory starts this January 15th, with cast switching starting on February 5th. To get the complete cast list with information and links to buy tickets, click over to theaterinchicago.com. Chicago Shakespeare Theater continues its family series with Short Shakespeare, A Midsummer Night's Dream, a 75-minute abridged version of the classic comedy, adapted and directed by Amanda Dennert. The Short Shakespeare series is designed for adults to help them introduce to their children great classic theater. Chicago Shakes is the region's largest professional theater company dedicated to the works of Shakespeare, and their Elizabethan thrust stage creates a unique closeness between the audience members and the actors. The stage is surrounded on three sides by the audience, making each member an important part of the performance. Short Shakespeare, A Midsummer Night's Dream will run for 7 Saturdays through March 7th. It's playing at the Chicago Shakespeare's Courtyard Theater on Navy Pier. To find out how to get tickets, head on over to our website. Broadway in Chicago will soon present Monty Python's Spamalot at the Auditorium Theater. Based on the screenplay of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Spamalot features a book by former Monty Python cast member Eric Idle. The show was directed by Mike Nichols and made its pre-Broadway debut here in Chicago. Then, Spamalot went on to win the Tony Award for Best Musical in 2005. It then came back with a triumphant return in 2006 to the Cadillac Palace Theater. Telling the legendary tale of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, along with flatulent Frenchmen, killer rabbits, and one legless knight, Monty Python Spamalot will run for a limited engagement from January 20th through February 1st. To get your tickets to see Spamalot, follow our links on theaterinchicago.com. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, and this is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Chris Henderson for giving us the honor of interviewing her this week. I would also like to thank Ann Nicholson Weber and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And I would also like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.